Most African countries have a number of religious, linguistic, and ethnic groups, and many of those say their concerns are not taken into account by those in power. Some recent constitutions have provisions to encourage nation building, including measures to guarantee the voices of alienated or disenfranchised groups are heard. The move toward greater inclusivity can be seen in constitutional support for group rights. Windluck Wehu is the project manager at the Stockholm-based International Institute for Democracy and Electoral Assistance, or International IDEA. He says the constitutions of South Africa, Uganda, and Ethiopia offer provisions that protect group rights. Ethiopia recognizes the territories of many ethnic groups and says citizenship is defined by belonging to one of them. Uganda and Ghana acknowledge the cultural autonomy of traditional kingdoms, and South Africa names 11 national languages to be included in all government transactions. In Nigeria, the constitution requires that the country's ethnic composition be reflected in political parties, universities, and the military. Wahyu says Kenya's 2010 constitution recognizes the rights of what it calls marginalized people, including nomadic pastoralists like the Turkana and the Maasai.
Which is to say that, for example, the Maasai have the first claim on park fees that are paid by tourists who go, for example, to the world-famous Maasai Mara. These are being recognized as rights that only the Maasai have because they're the ones who traditionally have a claim on that land, and moreover, that they've been marginalized by the state in terms of the development philosophy since their independence.
Also among the marginalized groups recognized by the Kenya Constitution are ethnic Somalis. They, like the Maasai, straddle several borders in the Horn of Africa.
Don't forget that in Kenya since at least 1967, the northern part of Kenya where you have the Somalis has been put under emergency law. It's been governed through martial law, which started when the Somalis communities in there sought secession through violence, of course, in order to join Somalia. This is the first time actually we are waiving the martial law and recognizing them as citizens of the country.
In other African states, citizenship is extended to all people living within the territory, but without an emphasis on group rights. This is the case in Mali, where the last constitution before the military coup in March emphasized individual rights, with little recognition of economic or social differences in the country's various administrative units. The constitution's philosophy is summed up in its motto, "One people, one purpose, one faith." Wahyu says in practice, the approach tends to favor educated citizens near the capital, but ignores the needs of traditionally disadvantaged rural groups, including the Tuareg of the Sahel in the north. They've often lacked the political power to get state support for affirmative action, the distribution of tax benefits, or recruitment into the civil service and army.
Now, the Tuaregs, who are well off in the north, felt that the very definition of Malians as citizens ignored the factor of social inequality and ignored the second-class citizenship status of the groups in the north. Now, this is something that is repeated all over Africa, where groups claim that using language which is neutral, that just sees people as citizens, belies the fact that some groups have been disadvantaged as such for quite a long time, and that you need to recognize them specifically so that they can claim measures such as affirmative action, positive discrimination. They want to have claims on national resources.
Group rights, at least among ethnic groups, are also not emphasized in Rwanda, where tribal divisions between Hutu and Tutsi led to civil war and genocide in 1994. The country's constitution does not recognize ethnic or linguistic differences. It instead calls for the eradication of ethnic divisions and the promotion of national unity. Reiner Grote is a senior research fellow at the Max Planck Institute for Comparative Public Law and International Law in Heidelberg and an adjunct professor of law at the University of Göttingen, Germany. He says Rwanda's approach to national unity and group rights is the opposite of neighboring Burundi, where the constitution guarantees that state structures and organs include members of the country's main ethnic groups.
The first saying that ethnicity as a divisive issue should be banned from national politics, including constitutional politics, so mention should not be made in it, in the constitution at all, if possible. And the other approach that one adopted in Burundi, that is being that ignoring these kind of dividing lines within the political community does not help, and that it's necessary in order to create confidence, to create an atmosphere of trust, that you acknowledge these existing divisions and you reflect them within the supreme bodies of the state by reserving quorum of seats for each major group of the population and by providing for a collective presidency in which all major groups shall be represented, and so on.
Sometimes recognition of group rights can lead to a backlash. Wahyu says it may occur when the drive for greater rights includes ethnic groups with separatist elements dispersed among many countries.
These groups, ethnic groups that straddle borders, have always been seen suspiciously by the mainstream groups within these countries as people who want to dismember the country. You know, and this, I think, is the resistance towards territorial autonomy schemes, because people believe that by awarding, for example, groups such as the Somali, claims or to govern themselves in those areas, that you're giving them an impetus to start demanding secession rights to form their own greater state of Somalia.
Wahyu says granting more local sovereignty can also create conflict with the national government. For example, he says the Maasai in Kenya would rather use fees from tourist areas to strengthen their cultural way of life rather than to comply with central government directives that may undermine it. He says one example includes mandatory universal access to primary education.
They put the money, of course, into land buying schemes, you know, so that they can have more land to graze their cattle as they move up and down, you know, which means they're buying land from the neighboring communities. Now, much of this land used to belong to them in the first place, just that it was alienated in the 60s, and it was converted into settled agricultural lands. So as people move from the rural countryside to the cities, the Maasai are finding there's an opportunity to buy these lands.
Other countries like Zambia and Ivory Coast do not recognize groups who moved there decades ago as migrant workers. Their citizenship is tied to landowners who can trace their claims to pre-colonial times. Botswana does not recognize the rights of indigenous bushmen or their claims to lands. Wahyu says countries need to address such group tensions with national legal and political institutions. He says solutions to the problem are often not possible when a constitution says such claims cannot exist in part because all citizens are already nominally equal. Wahyu warns that approach can lead to war or some other form of rupture in society that can set back a country's overall economic development. I'm William Eagle in Washington.